are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
All the way from Westeros, we have Lord Tayhole of the House Bedix.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
All right. And I say that all the time. I was like, it's a little hot in these rhinos. Like, I feel like, when he comes out of the rhino butt, you know, like,
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
That's nasty, dude. That's Khloe Kardashian underwear after two nights in Vegas. Nasty. That is disgusting, dude.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and we're going to do another team preview, as I'm sure you guys have gotten accustomed to over these last few weeks here. With me to do the Seattle Mariners is Mr. Evan Peterson. Evan, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Just ready to talk Seattle Mariners with pretty much the only person that you can associate with the Mariners.
Yeah, we have a little special treat. For everybody, all the way from Westeros, we have Lord Tayhole of the House Bedict.
Yes, it is. I appreciate the intro. It's very exciting for me to be back. And I leave for a year. I come back and you're hosting radio shows and become Matthew McConaughey cool. And it's a real pleasure.
I will never get that status unless I'm doing a new Lincoln commercial every other week. And God. I can't stand those. I just, on a quick side note, if I see another one, I'm literally going to throw my TV.
I don't think anyone can. I mean, there's like national, I mean, people clown them in every articles on TV all the time. It's like a national joke, but it's like they keep popping them off. I mean, it's getting wild.
It is. It's bad. But, Evan, where can everybody reach you on Twitter and such, you know, social media, and give yourself some plugs?
At EasyEv3, and you're probably going to see me following and retweeting Tayhole stuff, because he's a much better Twitter follower than I am.
Yeah, one of the top, I mean, it's very polarizing. You either love Tayhole in terms of his tweet action, or you kind of hate it. It's one way or the other, but if you love it, then right. It's something you really love. So Tayhole, where can people find you?
Right now it's Lord Bedict 1, the number 1. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm funnier than I really am, I think, sometimes, because I'm like, if I was really funny, I would have, like, way more followers. So, like, I'm not funny. So that's kind of depressing.
That's not true. I think you're, like, losing some self-esteem here. I don't know how this happened.
I mean, a few people will say you're really funny, but it seems to be a select few, and then everybody else hates me.
That's why you're polarizing, man. It's, you know, acquired taste. You either, you know, love you or you don't. I mean, it's the way it goes. You're really dirty. I mean, if we're going to be really honest about it, you're a very dirty guy.
Yeah.
You know, so if you don't like really raunchy humor, then no, you're not somebody's cup of tea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I need to go all the way with, like, one time. I mean, sometimes I can be on there, like, dogging, like, Republicans. On one day I could be on there dogging liberals, or, like, this and that. It's like I need to just pick one side, one personality, one attitude, and just become the character, like Jim Rome or something like that. I mean, you just got to go all the way with it. I'm too all over the place.
Two questions for you.
Skip. Oh, this is who I am. I'm the next Skip Bayless. That's the goal.
Oh, God, don't even talk about him. But two questions for you, Tayhole. A, are you still going to be voting for Rubio in 4 years? A. That's
Is there a B, or are you going to ask?
I'm going to ask A first, and then I'm going to go to B.
Okay. Oh, most definitely. But, I mean, he won't be. I don't remember how that works. Doesn't the president just kind of have to go against the other party? Like, they don't have to. 40 people vote a different Republican in. I mean, does that happen? Am I tripping?
I don't think you're. I mean, maybe he has. I honestly will be voting. I just thought you were a big Rubio guy coming in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Next time he runs, I will be there.
You'll be
at the polls, and by at the polls, I mean sending in my ballot, like, in the mail, because I'm not going to go sit at no polls. I can't believe people actually do that shit.
All right, and question B, are you still modeling?
Absolutely. Please contact me for any work. I will work for almost free anything.
Do you have an agent?
Guns, drugs. What?
Do you have an agent? Is it Young Buck?
Young Buck and I actually do share an agent. His name I can't reveal because he's a very dangerous man.
Baby shoes.
I was saying,
yeah, you don't want to mess with them.
You're not familiar with Entourage? Come on now.
Jeremy Piven.
Of course,
I'm familiar with Jeremy Piven and Entourage. That movie, just like as I figured, was just didn't really do much for me. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't really love the last season of Entourage, if we're on it. But yes, I knew immediately what you're talking about. So sorry if I did make it known that I knew.
No, I agree on the Entourage front. And you know, just to be honest with the audience here, it's gonna be kind of crazy. All right, like we're gonna be
I'm sorry.
Let's get weird.
But you know. Whenever you have Taylor on a show, it's always going to be a little nuts. And when you kind of add three of us together, it's, you know, it's going to get off topic sometimes. So, you know, going in, just realize, you know, there's going to be a lot of nonsense on here. We're definitely going to give some baseball analysis too, but it's going to be a lot of nonsense. So let's try and keep it on task, at least to start.
Taylor,
one of your acquisitions this offseason was Jerod Dyson. And I know I've talked about him a lot, so I don't really need to go more in depth. I like him. I like, you know, the player. I think that he's going to lead off and, you know, he's going to steal a ton of bases. But how do you like the move, you know, being a Mariners fan, A, and then B, how do you like him in fantasy?
I was super excited, and I don't ever use the term super excited, so it's weird that I just decided to right now. But it's cool because I've always been a Dyson fan. In fact, every time like one of the Royals guys over the past couple of years would get hurt and he would come in, I'd be like, yes, because I'd love to play him in fantasy because I feel like he should be playing more, kind of like how I used to feel about Rajai Davis. But when he got a lot of playing time this last year, he kind of let me down to a degree. I mean, he was okay. What did he hit? 270, 280 or something like that.
Yeah.
He did steal quite a few bases. I mean, we never really had a great base stealer. So this is kind of exciting for me. If he gets to play every day, I think he'll be a pretty valuable player and definitely fantasy wise. If he's stealing a ton of bags with the bangers behind him, Murderer's Row, he could score a ton of runs. I love it.
Do you think that he stays in the leadoff spot against righties the majority of the season, or do you think they like Leonis Martin a little bit more?
Martin was so streaky as I expected last year when he was so hot. People thought he turned a corner or something, but he fell back to earth. I think that the manager seems to kind of play things by ear or whatever. He might see how it goes and just try Dyson full time, which is what I would like to see, but if not, I'd have no problem. This guy's changing stuff around all the time, so he'll find the right fit for him. But I'd like to see him in the leadoff spot all season.
Evan, what's your temperature on Jerod Dyson coming into this year?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how the leadoff situation is going to shake out, especially against left-handed pitching, where that 379 against lefties is weighted in only 29 at-bats last year. But it's kind of hard to argue with the draft price going outside the top 300 for a guy who has got 25 or more steals the past 5 years. If we're going to knock out Leonis Martin while we're here, I mean, he could definitely step up and steal this spot in the lineup. I want to see the fly balls keep up. I want to see him hit better on ground balls, reproduce the hard hit rate, and just make better contact overall. But I think Martin could definitely take this job over from Dyson before the season's said and done.
I love Dyson for fantasy much more than I do Martin, and I, you know, have ended up with Dyson a couple times already in mock drafts, so I'm definitely leaning towards Dyson keeping the spot, especially against righties the majority of the season. Can that kind of change? Absolutely, and I think that should be something that's, you know, put into your, you know, research going into the season. But like you already mentioned, Evan, he is somebody that's stolen 25 or more bases each of the last 5 years, 30 or more in four of the last five, and he was batting ninth with the Royals the majority of that time. So even if he was slotted ninth for the Mariners, I don't really have a problem drafting him still because I think he's going to be on the strong side of a platoon and should get at least 400 at-bats or so. And if he does, then he's going to steal almost 30 bases, and he's cheap. So there's no problem with Dyson. Martin, I'm
you know, I like where he's going at 240, but I don't think he's really going to exceed that draft slot by much. I do like the fact that he, you know, stole, you know, 24 bases last year. It's a little bit down from a couple of those 30-plus seasons in, you know, 2013 and 2014 with the Rangers. But I just think that he strikes out too much to be a batting average guy. He's never going to really hit more than 250. I have him at 241 right now in my projections, so I think that that's where he'll probably sit. Double-digit home runs, et cetera. But, you know, for, overall, I think that he's just fine where he's going. I don't think he's going to exceed that spot. Somebody that's probably going to exceed their draft spot, at least they did last year, is Gene Segura. You guys acquired him in the Arizona deal that sent Taijuan Walker over to the Diamondbacks. Tejol, are you excited to have Gene Segura on your team?
Can we take a second to appreciate the incredible verbal run you just went on right there for what seemed like 5 minutes? That was incredible.
I try not to.
What is going on? You're becoming a true legend.
You always say that to me, and I, you know, I always appreciate it. I'm very, very nice of you to say.
I'm not often that complimentary to others. But are we, Segura? I mean, I need you to. I mean, did you during that 10-minute diatribe there? Did you spit out Segura's numbers this last year?
No.
What did he?
He ended up with 20 runs and 33 stolen bases, if that's what you want.
Okay, so yeah, I'm more interested in your guys' opinion about Segura, like the power numbers. Like, I was kind of down on the trade, like, a little bit, and then I remember Segura, like, kind of the monster's bounce back season he had last year, and that 2 years before that, he was, like, a very high fantasy pick and was a very popular player. So it was just kind of weird, the inconsistent year or two in between there, which is kind of throwing me off. And I know it's not as hitter friendly, so I'm a little bit worried. Are you guys?
I'll just start off by saying that I will not be drafting Segura based on where he's going. I don't think the power is repeatable. I do think the stolen bases will be fine, but the batting average and the power I don't think is repeatable at all. Evan, you can give some more analysis if you want, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I get the storyline that Segura needed to get out of Milwaukee after he had some difficult stuff going on in his life, but getting out of Arizona typically isn't a positive for your fantasy value. And when you look at the increased home run to fly ball rate at Chase Field last year, I think projecting him anywhere over his previous career high of 12 home runs is kind of a fool's errand, even when you look at the 20 he hit last year. Even if you buy into half of what he showed for a hard hit rate last year, I don't see it. Nobody thinks he's going to duplicate the batting average. He hit a career 297 on ground balls. And the one thing that I found was absolutely ridiculous. You guys will love this. On the Fangraphs split tool, on balls that weren't grounders, so fly balls or line drives, he had a 1359 OPS. And just for reference, Chris Bryant had a 1378. So that was 20 points of difference. And I don't think that we're going to compare those two in any other way, and I don't think it's repeatable. So I like the stolen bases. Like I said, I think he gets some time at the leadoff spot, but there's definite regression coming here.
Yeah, I have him under 15 home runs, and I also have him under the 33 steals that he got last year as well. So just to kind of, you know, piggyback off of your, you know, Chase Field take there, Chase Field gives a, you know, what, 15% bump in overall runs scored, and is also giving a 9% bump in batting average as well. That's something that Seattle doesn't do. It actually gives suppression, 12% suppression in runs scored, and also a 10% or 7% depression in batting average as well to righties. So I think that's just naturally going to be a, you know, regression year for him, but doesn't mean he's not valuable. I just think that he's more of a top 80, 90 player, not a top 50 player, which is where he's currently going in drafts. So
yeah. And Steamer,
you guys like the trade from a baseball standpoint?
Yeah. I mean, he had a fantastic season and I think he'll be really good at the top.
What about the Ty Walker side?
No, I mean, that's just bad.
Who do you guys think won this trade? I need your guys' opinions on this.
Mike?
I think it's really close. I think it's fair. If I had to say right now, I would say Seattle did.
Yeah. The one thing I don't really see is why Steamer only has him projected for 76 home runs, or 76 runs, wow. Excuse me. That would be a fantastic spike in his home run to fly ball rate. But I think when we start talking about these guys behind him, I think you have to project him for more than that.
Yeah, you think he's in a better situation to score more runs even than he was last year there at Arizona.
I mean, well, he scored 100 Arizona's runs lineup in Arizona.
Kind of nasty last year.
Yeah.
I think overall we have a better lineup than they do, right? Or the power in the middle, sort
yeah.
of.
Yeah, the lineup's definitely better. I mean, if you look at the Mariners lineup as a whole, but, you know, at some point Nelson Cruz has to break down, you'd assume.
Right. Yeah, but we...
We'll get to, but it's not.
Oh, yeah. I knew we'd get that about Cruz. Yeah, you got to feel like these last two, he's been so great these last 2 years that you got to feel like something is going to happen, whether it's an injury or he's just going to fall off or whatever. I mean, something seems like it's due to go wrong with him. He's been incredible these last 2 years. It's so sad, especially 2 years ago. Just monster season. When everybody thought when he went to Seattle he was going to drop, was going to become a dud. He was everybody's fantasy bust for that year because he's going from hitter-friendly to Seattle where none of these hitters ever succeed. We all remember Adrian Beltre. We remember all the big signings that all don't work out, but he does it like it was nothing, and he's a monster.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, love him for it. Nelson Cruz, he's the next guy in the lineup anyway, so...
Yeah, well, once again, I was kind of playing with the Fangraph split tool. I love this thing. If you guys aren't just spending all of your free time on it, then I guess you have more of a life than I do. But on pulled balls that weren't grounders for Nelson Cruz, he hit 800. And you heard me 100% correctly there. Part of that is a crazy 632 BABIP. Part of it is an even crazier 82.4% home run to fly ball rate. So he's been awesome since he left Arlington. The names in front of him in WRC Plus over the past three seasons are Mike Trout, Joey Votto, Miguel Cabrera, Paul Goldschmidt, and Anthony Rizzo, who you've all heard of. And he's going like 40th in NFBC as the ninth outfielder off the board. He doesn't hit fantastic at Safeco. He's more of a road warrior, which he's also been when he went to Camden. And I love Nelson Cruz. I don't think he's going to break down, and I'm buying everywhere I can this year, which means he's going to suck. So, sorry.
the injury problem is something that I always have thought about with him, but at the same time, he's acquired or accumulated over 589 at-bats in each of the last 3 years, 585 for the last 5 years, actually. And, you know, over the last 3 years, leading the league in home runs, at least outfielders, and also third in ISO amongst outfielders as well. I have nothing, you know, bad to say about Nelson Cruz. I think that he's a legitimate candidate to, you know, hit 40 bombs again. And he's only going at, you know, pick 43. That's, you know, three or four picks behind Giancarlo Stanton, who gets injured seemingly every year. And, you know, eight picks in front of JD Martinez. I would gladly take Cruz there. I have no problem with that at all. I do want to kick it back to Segura really fast because I think somebody that's very comparable if they get the playing time is Jose Peraza. And he's going at pick 135 compared to the 50th spot for Segura at second base. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, throw that out there that if you're looking for an alternative guy that has, you know, a comparable skill set to Segura, I don't mind going Peraza. So, the next guy we're going to talk about is Robinson Cano. Tejo, are you still happy that you're on, what, year four of the 10-year contract that you got with him, or are you done with him yet?
Are we even at year four, or is it year three? It might be year three, which is insane. I mean, luckily, it hasn't been a topic of conversation much at all because he's been good, and last year he was really good. And then, but yeah, I imagine it will start becoming an interesting combo for the next couple of years, luckily. And then here, especially with some of these contracts not being as big as they kind of, the people getting more fiscally responsible, like, I mean, this contract might look worse. I thought when things were getting out of control that maybe it wouldn't look so bad comparatively, but I'm not sure what's going on right now around the league. But, he's been about as good as to be expected. I mean, it's not his fault. I mean, we got him and Cruz. I mean, what more can we ask from these two dudes? I mean, he's been great. Plus, he's at second base. And I knew he'd have a bounce back, or I didn't know, obviously, but I'd hoped he'd have the bounce back. Last year, he did. You could say I reached on him, as I was told by Rasball's Rudy, my homie and part owner of the site.
Didn't
told me
like
I was doing
a problem though the year before last
yeah
the
so
second
yeah
half
it turned out that he had some problems, but you never know if that's legit or not. But it turned out obviously it was something that bothered him, so I'm expecting another big year out of him, but how much longer can it last? I mean, he's eventually gonna have to move to like first base, people are talking about. I'm like, that'll be interesting, but Hopefully that's not for a while.
I think we have a little while for him to be moving over to first base. At least for me, I think he's still fine defensively. He's actually aged quite well, and he's done well for that contract, even though it was so outrageous. Still only 34. He's not somebody that's fallen off the map at all. And definitely based on his early ADP, it's fantasy owners are still willing to buy. He's going 32nd. Right now,
you just read my mind. I was going to say, give it to me. Give me his ADP.
Yeah.
And he said it.
He's the fourth second baseman off the board right now, right in front of Daniel Murphy, actually, which I find interesting. Rougned Odor is behind him as well. D. Gordon. So I think this tells me, I mean, we already know
who's at the top.
Oh, it's Altuve. He's a
top my three boy. Player. My boy. Who's second?
For me at second base, I'm going to be waiting. I'm not going to be getting Cano, but it doesn't mean that I think that he's going to, just kind of plummet, off the face of the earth. I think that he's, still fine. I'm just not willing to buy him at that cost because there's some other guys later on and, going a little bit after him that I would rather take a chance on. Evan, what's your take on Cano for 2017?
I mean, he's a boss, but I just don't know where to project the power. He's a solid enough hitter that nobody's going to blink if he hits 30, which is where the early fan projections on Fangraphs have him pegged at. Steamer's a little lower. You're looking at a 24 total, which I think I'd gamble on the over for if I was putting money down. He is doing much better on the pulled ball. As a Yankee, he hit .336 on pulled balls. His first 2 years as a Mariner, he hit .282, and he was back in that .335 sweet spot last year, counting for 22 of his 39 long balls, mostly just because he was putting them in the air. Imagine that. He swung at a lot of pitches outside the zone last year, and the percentage of them that he's making contact with is still a little bit below his career average. So I don't know if we're seeing a decline in batting eye, but I think the price is just a little too high, and there's definitely better guys that I would take later. I would rather sit and wait on like a Ian Kinsler or a Jason Kipnis, somebody like that. So I'll be passing on Cano this year.
Yeah, you're seeing a marginal decline in his batting eye, but I don't think it's a lot, and I don't think it's something that's just going to plummet, like I said before. And I will say the power is going to go down. I would be shocked if he hit more than 30 home runs. He had a 36% fly ball rate last year, which and the highest home run to fly ball or second highest home run to fly ball rate of his career. So like that mixed together tells me that if he regresses back to his, he had a 36% fly ball. So if it goes back down to his career norm, which is 30%, and the home run to fly ball drops back to 14 to 15%, which is his career norm as well, then you're looking at more of like a 25 to 28 home run season, which is still great. But I just, it's not worth paying for in the top 30. So let's move on to Kyle Seager, who I think is like one of the most underrated commodities in fantasy. He's not flashy at all, but he just always goes out and does his job. He, maintains stellar home run numbers, just stellar numbers across the board. And people just kind of underrate that. Last year, he ended up as a top 10 third baseman once again on the ESPN Player Rater. He's at least penciled in right now to bat fifth in this lineup. Tejol, give us all of your glowing reports on Kyle Seager.
Oh, we love Kyle Seager out here. I kind of was upset about him in 2015, because even though he somehow ended with 26 homers and .266 average, it felt like it all came over the last month of the season when their season was already long in the tank after he'd been horrible half that year. So his stats for 2015 seem crazy now, but I remember that he got crazy hot to end the year, but the games were all meaningless, so nobody was paying attention. So yeah, I always kind of held that against him. But last year, real solid throughout the year. Real good, hit 30 for the first time, right under 100 at 99. He was there. I don't know how he didn't get it. But the average is always solid, 260, 270, 280. You're going to get in that range. He could. He's right in his prime year, 29 years old, 28, 29. Is he going to, a guy who's normally, who we think is going to hit 40? No. People usually project him around 30, but there's no telling. I mean, he could have a monster year. I mean, he's here 28, 29. You're literally at your physical peak. But I would say he'll probably have a year pretty similar to this last one.
Right now, he's going as the fifth third baseman off the board, about pick 66. He did have a career high, it looks like, in batting average against righties last year. So, Evan, do you think that this is repeatable for him, or are you going to be looking other routes?
I think it's definitely repeatable. He's been a consistent power source. He's top 30 in home runs hit since 2012 when he started his five-year playing streak of over 155 games. But he does struggle with the power a little bit at home. Over his career, his ISO is 50 points lower at Safeco. But I love his batting eye, and if people are going to freak out because he's a statistically slow starter in April and September, he tailed off, and that's right in line with what he's done in his career. So if people start looking at either of those and start selling, I would definitely be looking to buy. But he did show how much of an anomaly that 297 he hit off lefties in 2015 was by hitting 227 off them last year. But there were positives there. He replicated a 200 ISO against southpaws. So got to give him some props, and I think he's definitely primed for another fantastic season for you.
Agreed. I mean, I think any way that we throw stats at you, it's all going to come. I think it's all going to point to him being healthy and consistent, which is what you're paying for at pick 66. And I'm okay with doing that. I mean, is there other guys behind him that could, you know, surpass him in terms of upside? Maybe, you know, but I still think that he's going at a fair price. So if you pick Seager at 66, I have no problems with that. I think that that's a sound play, especially for consistency.
Consistency. He hit 5 home runs in every month last year and 3 months in 2015, bringing his total to 9 over that 2-year period. For comparison's sake, Bryce Harper has one more month like that over his 5-year career. So it's just a little fun fact I found, but he's definitely a solid power source.
Well, since we're still talking about him, Tejo, you watch him like on a daily basis. Do you think that he'll ever steal more than like 5 to 10 bases again? Because he has a career high of 13 in 2012, but he really just hadn't stolen much since. Like, you watch him on a daily basis, do you think that he's still athletic enough to steal 10 bases or so?
You guys are so dialed in right now. It's insane. Are we going? I mean, what is this thing in Vegas? What does it cost to get into one of these tournament entries into the thing at the beginning of the season? It's like $5,000 or something. Like, if I buy one, you guys help me manage it for 10% a piece. Like, let's get this popping. Like, you guys
are just so dialed right now.
You guys are so dialed. I feel confident.
We're nerds.
That
man,
together, together, we can get into this, is what I'm saying. I've been dealing with this crap, and I just dialed into all the numbers you guys are filling me in. I feel like with your guys' combined knowledge, we could go all the way.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
We could conquer Westeros. I mean, we're like the three dragons. And then, you know, Justin's Khaleesi.
I'm the black one. Okay. And then, yeah, I feel like we should do that. But who's going to steal 10-bit? Seager stealing 10?
Well, I'm just asking if it's possible. Like, you watch him daily.
Yeah, yeah, I would hope not. I mean, I think it almost would serve not a huge purpose, really, for him to be stealing a ton of bags. I would hope it's most of the stealing's just done at the time. We're never really a team that likes to steal a ton of bases. So, I mean, what's the point? Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, 10 seems about where I would limit it, if I'm guessing.
I agree. I think that his double-digit steal dates are pretty much over. I know he hasn't done that since 2012, but he did come close in 2013, but it's kind of tailed off ever since, and I think that that's something that's probably going to stick. That's part of the reason I think they signed a couple of the speedsters they have, because they want to get faster on the base pass, and they probably won't do that with Seager.
An interesting lineup assemblage. Like, it's kind of a weird, like, I'm not really sure what's going on with the GM, kind of like what he's got going on. It's like, I don't hate it, but it's interesting to say the least. But anyway,
I personally like it. And, you know, one of the ways that they will have a successful year is if Mike Zunino ends up kind of coming back from the dead in terms of being a minor league prospect. He did have a month last year in August where he did only hit 212, but he hit 6 home runs and, really just showed that he has legitimate power, 50% fly ball rate in each of the months that he played from July on. That's definitely a great power profile. But, Evan, do you think that Zunino can be a relevant fantasy catcher this year?
What a segue. Did you see how he hit that? That's insane.
We've been working on that this offseason, professionalism.
Evan and I really fucked up a Jordan Zimmerman segue like an episode ago. It was really bad. So we're trying to like get rein things back in a bit.
Yeah, you know.
Do you guys hear any static, by the way?
No.
Or is that only mine?
No, we're okay, good.
Cool.
Anyway. What was the Mike Zunino outside two catcher leagues? No, he's power, but he's going to kill you in every ratio. And I just don't have any desire to have that on my team. So,
how about you, Tejal? Do you believe in the man they call Mike Zunino?
Oh man, I would have done just about anything, taking any animal you can imagine in the mouth. For Matt Wieters,
Matt Wieters,
man, and that's what I'm saying. Like, why? For me, it makes so much sense. We haven't made any big signings, anything too costly. We shed a little bit of hero. I felt like for a little bit. Like, I mean, the catcher spot has just been so weak for a few years. And Nino, I'm tired of waiting around. Like, he swings and misses so bad, like it's hard for me to believe he's ever gonna like improve mightily upon that. And even so, Wieters is a real solid guy to have around anyway. So I mean, like, why not get it done? I mean, these contracts, it can't be that big of a contract. And at this point, I would love to see that Zunino, you know, when he goes on one of those hot streaks, you know, it's cool because he's got the power, so you can own him then. But as far as do I trust him all year? No, I will believe it when I see it.
Yeah, he still strikes out a ton, and it really makes me wonder if he'll ever be able to, you know, have better than a 25% strikeout rate. Like, the 1 month that he did fairly well in August, he, you know, struck out 41% of the time that month. So it's really bad. I got really encouraged at the beginning when he got called up last year because he was cutting down on the strikeouts and he was doing that in the minors as well. So I thought that maybe he could kind of curtail that into some fantasy production, but really power is where he's at in terms of fantasy, you know, productivity. And I don't really see much outside of that right now, but the fact that he hits so many fly balls tells me that he's going to continue to hit for power. It's just gonna be whether he can ever not strike out as much, and I think that's the biggest question. And I think that we've already kind of answered it ourselves that it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. I will say Carlos Ruiz is on this roster and he's a veteran, obviously not fantasy viable in any way, but he's the opposite, and you know, not a lot of power, but he never strikes out. Do you think that he ends up taking this job and like kind of running with it the majority of the time, Tejal?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, God, that just brought me back to the trade last year when we traded Mother F and Trumbo, Big T-Bone for that bum-ass backup catcher Clevenger, who's no longer on the team. I was thinking of it. Yeah, that was a cool trade. That was really cool. And then, that could definitely happen. I mean, or even, you know, just isn't like he split time, but if he's anything like he has been, which he's done nothing to make me think he won't be, I would think Ruiz, especially if they're ending and playing good baseball, that he'll be back there most of the time. I always kind of liked Ruiz. I like it.
Yeah, I think he ends up taking a lot of the time away, which tells me that, you know, Zunino is probably going to be outside of the top 20 catchers. Right now, he's going right at 20 in NFBC.
But is he still one with upside, do you believe, or are those days past? I mean, does he still have, like, big upside? Like, are those days totally?
I think that if he were to – I mean, he hit 12 home runs in 160 at-bats. If he was to
– So could he hit 30?
Yes.
No.
If he was given 400 30? At-bats, I think he could hit 30. Yeah. Because the fact of the matter is when he makes contact – it's going over the fence. Like, to say he's going to hit 30 could also come with a 195 average, and I'm not exaggerating. I mean, that's where we're kind of at with him. But, you know, a lot of catchers can't hit for that type of power, and the guys that are going around him, you know, Travis d'Arnaud, Devin Mesoraco, Yan Gomes, those guys are all injury risk, and at least Zunino will probably stay healthy. I think that he's worth a gamble just based on the power alone, but, you know, catcher position is so bad that I'm willing to take that risk that late. At the same time, I do think he's a two-catcher-only type of guy, not somebody that you want to take as your lone catcher at the end of a draft or anything like that. So mixed leagues, he's not somebody I would go with unless it's a two-catcher format. Let's move on to Dan Vogelbach, who I'm really excited about, personally. Tejo, I want to know how excited you are about him, because, you know, a long-time Cub prospect that, you know, everybody really was excited about in terms of power. Then he gets moved over to the Mariners in the Mike Montgomery deal, and it looks like he's going to get a starting job this season. So how excited are you about Daniel Vogelbach? I feel like I keep asking you that, too. Like, how excited are you about these players? How down on you are you on Dan Vogelbach?
Super duper excited about big Danny Vogelbach. Yeah, it's cool. We get somebody's big prospect because all of ours have become duds, you know, so it's like maybe we have better luck bringing in people because our first round picks have just been absolute ass lately and I just can't take it anymore. So it's cool to see a guy who I'm hoping they just gave him up because they're that desperate and thought they could win the titles for the middle reliever. I guess I know they didn't have they always say they didn't have a place to bring him up in Chicago anyway with Rizzo in the way and everything. But it's like, that's not a good enough excuse if you could have got a better package for the guy. So, like, is he that good? Is this guy an all-star caliber player at some point for sure or no?
Evan, tell us.
I mean,
I'm hosting the show now. Okay, yes. Please tell me. I'm asking you guys.
I don't know how Steamer can project a 12% walk rate on a guy who has, you know, 13 plate appearances in the majors, but okay, we'll roll with it. I don't know. Right now, Steamer has him not even projected for double-digit home runs, so I'm
how many
not
at-bats?
290, or that's plate appearances, sorry, 257.
I think he would hit more, but go ahead.
I mean, he's got the pedigree of doing it in the minors, but he, you know, wasn't inspiring in the tiny cup of, like, one of those miniature, mini cups of coffee that he had last year. I'm not a prospect guy, and I'm not Dan Vogelbach's biggest fan, so I'm just going to let somebody else enjoy the ride. So, Mike, tell me why I'm wrong.
I'm going to monitor.
And you got to talk about Valencia, right? Or is he not involved in this combo?
He will be. We'll talk about Valencia. But Vogelbach, I think, is going to be on the strong side of a platoon. More likely will, you know, he can't really play first. So they haven't penciled in at first right now. But that's probably going to be an issue for him. He's definitely more of a DH type of guy, which means that, you know, whenever they face an NL team, he probably won't be playing much. But, you know, if I had to, like, tentatively project at-bats for him, I think that he's right about at 370 or so, and that's being a little bit optimistic probably. But if he gets 370 at-bats, I expect him to hit 15 home runs. He has a major power profile in the minor leagues. He doesn't strike out a ton either. He's not like a Joey Gallo type. He doesn't, you know, he's only had one time in the minor leagues where he eclipsed 20% in strikeout rate, but he has a ton. You want to know the reason he has a 12% walk rate on Steamer is because he has a ton of high upside walk rates in the minor leagues. Like, he has one, like, mini season where he threw up a, you know, what looks like a 35% walk rate, which is a very miniature sample size, but, like, consistently over 15%, 13%, you know, all that type of stuff. So he's the type of guy that has a great, great plate skills, which really usually correlates well with success in the MLB. I think that he can hit for a good batting average whenever he does find consistent playing time, and I think he can get hit for good power. So I'm willing to
watch him. How many homers is he hitting in 2017?
I'd put the over-under at 15 if he is in the major leagues all season.
Under.
And I say over if he's in the major leagues. Now, if he's not in the major leagues all year, and I guess if I, you know, I have to make a prediction, I would say he probably won't be in the majors all year. So I'll say under as well. But if he does, if he is,
so
he's gonna hit 15.
What you guys are telling me is that this guy cannot play first base.
No, he's hideous defensively. He's not a guy that can play. I mean, he probably can play first base, but it's gonna be marginal.
So we're talking about like a Billy Butler, no power having, no defense
no, no,
having.
No. Billy Butler wishes he had the power of Dan Vogelbach, but here's what you do in fantasy. You wait, especially in like shallower mix formats, you kind of wait on him. And if he starts to kind of blow up a bit as the season goes on, then you pick him up. In AL only formats, I think he is a fine corner. I mean, he's absolutely free right now. He's going at pick 430. So I'm okay with taking a flyer on him in AL only formats.
You know, in all of my years in this game, I've never played in an AL or NL only fantasy league.
Really?
Ever.
Well, you need to do it, man. It will broaden your horizons.
Will that? Okay.
Mitch Haniger is honestly somebody I don't know a ton about. I'm definitely going to look at his numbers, and I'm going to talk to you about what I see there. But, Evan, what do you have for me on Mitch Haniger, who was a part of the trade for Taiwan Walker to the Mariners?
Is this Evan's job? Is he the
no.
He's prospect,
he's good analytically.
Man.
He's not one of the prospect guys. Matt Thompson is our prospect analyst, but Evan's good with numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good with numbers, but I don't pretend to know jack shit about prospects or anything like that. The one thing I do like is that from 2015 to 2016, he got better in almost every category in his repeat of double A, which is what you like to see when a guy, gets back in a level, repeats it. But I like the batting profile if it can continue, and especially the walk rate is something I'm interested in. But he's going to get playing time. I don't think any of these what is it, Kyle Lewis or not Lewis, I don't know who the hell I'm thinking of, which is why I'm not on the prospect minute. I don't know
Ben
that
Gamble
him
or Taylor Motter.
Yeah, well, you just wanted to bring him up because he was a former Ray, and I think he's gonna get the playing time, but I'm not 100% sure what to expect from him.
You probably meant Tyler.
Damn,
O'Neill.
Can I come on the Rays? Can I come on the Rays podcast just to listen in?
We already did the Rays podcast.
Get some inside info, man.
Yeah, they got Malik Smith. You could talk about all the guys.
I'm so interested in that franchise. What's happening with the franchise? There's so much to talk about with them, sort of.
There is a lot. We went way long on the show, so it was
right.
So
no need to
combo.
Go back into it. I'll go check it out on YouTube right now or iTunes.
Do you have any thoughts on Mitch Haniger, Dayhole?
Or Danny Valencia?
I was kind of excited because I asked about our Razzball dude, this Ralph. I asked him a lot about our
Ralph Lifshitz.
He does all the prospect stuff for us and does all the stuff. So I was just, even though I always just throw it by him or whatever, but it seemed like a lot of people seem to like this guy, and so I'd never seen much of him, but statistically I was kind of intrigued by what's going on. The dude seems like he's got definitely has power potential, and be nice to hit on one of these trades.
Yeah, I like Haniger a bit. The more I kind of look at his minor leagues or his minor league numbers and what he did in a small sample size in the majors last year with the Diamondbacks, it's kind of intriguing. I mean, he hit 5 home runs and 100 at-bats. It's nice to see. No, he didn't hit for batting average, but he did, have a nice home run to fly ball rate, showed a nice speed score, and had a really good fly ball percentage as well. Didn't strike out an obscene amount. Also walked in his small major league, exposure. So, I haven't projected, at least early right now, with a little bit over 300 at-bats. It probably will be more than that if he does okay at the beginning of the season. And if he does that, then I think he can hit double-digit home runs and has a chance to steal, 8 to 10 bases, which is certainly something that, fantasy owners like to see. So he's absolutely free right now. He's somebody to definitely monitor. I think that he is going to be somebody that gets a good amount of playing time. He is a righty, so he might not get end up getting platooned at some point, especially if the Mariners make a move or they bring up one of their stud minor leaguers, in particular Tyler O'Neill, who I will let Matt talk about on the prospect show. But at least right now, I think he's tentatively somebody that you might be able to draft in AL only, and somebody, again, just kind of on your watch list in deeper mix formats. I don't think he'll ever be like 10 team viable this year or anything like that, but he might be a nice little player for y'all. Danny Valencia is the last guy I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about Sean O'Malley or, Guillermo Heredia, if I pronounce that correctly at all. Valencia, somebody that had a really nice season last year. He's going a little bit outside of the top 315 right now in terms of ADP. I kind of like the guy as somebody that's not going to, outperform expectations, but he's definitely solid. He did slip off in the second half a bit last year, but that's kind of to be expected of somebody that's kind of getting up there in age a little bit and has never had the highest, pedigree in the world. But Evan, what do you think about Danny Valencia in his age 32 season?
He hits lefties pretty well. He can play multiple positions on the diamond, and in a very, very deep league, I would be interested in owning him.
Agreed. What do you think, Tejo, about Danny Valencia?
I mean, I feel like this. I mean, this was the move I think I was kind of most excited about for a while, just because I was like, this guy is the Sir Lancelot of lefties or against lefties, right? I mean, isn't this guy a legend? Like, I mean, he had 20, what, he had 20 bombs last year? I mean, I was kind of pumped for this guy. You guys are ruining it for me.
No, there's no reason. No, he's right now, his role, I think, is to be the platoon partner at first base with Dan Vogelbach. That's if they allow Vogelbach to be the full-time first baseman. But if they don't, then Valencia is probably going to end up getting, you know, a lot of almost the full-time job there with Vogelbach kind of mixing in, which is good for Valencia. I mean, Evan kind of shortchanged him. Like, he hit 318 against lefties last year, but he hit 298 the year before, 321 the year before that, 371 the year before that. So, like, this is a guy that in his career has a 320 mark against left-handed pitchers. Like, he's a legit lefty killer.
Well, and also, I mean, he's a career 246 against right-handers, but over the past 2 years, he's had over 275 against him as well. So he's getting better in that department, yeah, too.
Since he went to Oakland, I think that he's really kind of matured, not just age-wise. So there's no reason we're not trying to, you know, make your, you know, happiness over Danny Valencia wane in any way, Tejo. We promise.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else on?
I appreciate it.
Do you guys have anything you want to talk about in terms of like Ben Gamel or Taylor Motter? I know Ben Gamel got a little bit of hype before they made the Dyson deal.
No, I don't have really anything interesting to add to that. If you'd like to skip it,
it's okay.
If you want to skip that, I mean, I don't have anything really
to say on
is
Ben Gamel.
Is Motter? Nope. Motter's, nope. Motter's from Tampa, right?
Yeah, he is. He's a real, you know, he can play a bunch of different positions. He's kind of like he looks kind of like Justin Turner a bit. He's got like long hair and like a big beard. It's not red, but it's like very similar in terms of his.
Was he a former big? Was he a big time prospect at some point in time? No, not really.
Okay. He's just like a filler for us. He played he can play like shortstop in a ton of the, you know, middle infield spots, and he can also play the outfield. He's a nice little player, but he's not like somebody that's, you know, he's definitely not fantasy viable, so there's no reason to really talk about him unless for some reason he was able to get a lot of playing time, which I highly doubt would happen. So all right, moving on. Ben Gamel, I'm not really excited about, so we don't really need to talk about him much. We can let Matt talk about him as well. Let's move on to the rotation. So the first and foremost, we have Felix Hernandez, King Felix. Personally, I'm avoiding. How about you, Tejo? Are you? I feel like we had this conversation last year, and
we did. And I think you were right.
Yeah, I wasn't really high on him, and I don't think you were high on him necessarily. But I think you were hoping for better.
What was our bet? Well, I thought we had a bet like between him and it was somebody else, because I was saying he was like ranked still like getting way not enough respect, but then he responded with that just bung season last year, which is sad for me to watch. I mean, he's not that old, but again, people forget he's been in the league for so long. He's just a vet, and he's lost the speed a little bit, but I thought he was dialing it in, but he really was not good last year. The control was not on point like it always is. It was just ugly earlier. He dialed in a little bit, but it was just like, you know, what do you have, 3.73 ERA or something around that? It's just, you know, he's not striking people out at the same rate. The velocity's been down, but I'm a little concerned, but I'm still thinking that he has a good year, better than last season, and I think it was just a down year overall, and I'm hoping, but I don't think he's done, let's put it that way, because if he keeps on this decline, he'll be finished, he'll be Gallardo soon.
If you're drafting in a league right now, Tejo, are you taking him or Michael Fulmer?
I'm still taking Felix. Go with the upside there. I'm taking that.
Are you taking him believe. Or Dallas Keuchel?
Felix.
Him or Kevin Gausman?
King Felix, man. Gausman, man. Everybody loves this guy. I got to see something.
Well, he's going in front of all three of them, so you're you know, with the consensus on that. Evan,
so I'm like the common folk, and you're the analytical person to tell me how wrong and stupid we all are.
I don't think you're wrong and stupid. I definitely would take Fulmer and Gausman ahead of them. Well, actually, yeah, I would take all three of them ahead of them. So, yeah, I am calling you stupid. Evan, tell me why, or give us another reason why Tejo's stupid.
Please.
Other than he roots for the Mariners. No, I mean, Felix, I want to love him so much, and he was doing pretty good before he went down with the calf injury. He was looking at a 216 batting average against, you know, he was doing all right. He lost some zip on his fastball, and he just did not come back good. 14 of his 19 home runs came with the bases empty, and his ERA was 3.8. So imagine a little luck distribution there. This isn't the Felix we know and love. He had some struggles getting into favorable counts, as he posted one of the lowest first strike percentages of his career. And a fun little exercise: so you throw out 2016 and look at Felix after a 1-0 count, and he still strikes out 18% of batters and walks about 12% of them. In 2016, after a 1-0 count, he only struck out 14% of them, so 4% less, and he walked 16.5% of them, so 4.5% more. So I think he needs to do better in that regard, and I think, you know, maybe he wasn't completely over the calf injury, got a little rusty. I think we could see a bounce back from Felix.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be, like, in the first half last year, he put up a 2.86 ERA and a 1.22 whip. I don't think
back, because I remember the season being like, yeah, Mark, you were so wrong. I told you, he's still a legend. Bow down to the king. Bow down to the king. And then I got real cool the rest of the year because he was terrible.
Well, I don't think that he'll do what he did in the first half last year, but I certainly don't think he'll be as bad as the, you know, 4.5 ERA he put up in the second, or from July on, essentially. And he still has a nice ground ball tilt. He allows a lot of ground balls, which is nice. And then the strikeouts is what concerns me. They've trended down now. What, each of the last two seasons they've went down. You know, it was 9.5 K per nine in 2014. Now we're all the way down to 7.2. I don't think it's that bad. I have him right now at 8.1 in my projections. So I think that he's close to getting back to what he was doing in 2015 in terms of striking out.
How you
guys
got that? Where'd you get the projections? Are you over at his house massaging his hamstrings with warm milk every night? How do you know what his K-race can be?
That's what I project. It's not what I know. Okay. It's what I think is going to happen. But I have a process, and I always come up with my own projections. That's the way I do things. So,
Hashtag trust the process.
Hashtag trust the process. Yes, trust Mark's process.
Okay, I'm just interviewing you. I'm just giving interview. These are all questions for our to see if we should buy one of these.
But big money as a fantasy whole, leagues. Let's see. He's going right now as the 33rd starter. I think that's fair. I will say this. There's no way I'm taking Alex Reyes ahead of him, which is what's currently happening. Rich Hill is bound to get injured. And while I think Hill will be better while he's on the field, I just don't think he lasts.
People are drafting Rich Hill of
Matt Harvey. I'm not doing it.
No way. And I
people
think once
are drafting
hit,
Rich Hill.
Yeah, I think that. But I think that's the sweet spot, right around the 30th starter, and I think that that's fine because I do think that he rebounds from what he did last year, and I think he's fine. I don't think he's going to, be as great as he used to be ever again, but I do think he's still going to be serviceable. I mean, we kind of hit this lull with Justin Verlander for a while too, right? When he just lost his velocity and he had to figure out how to pitch just by using all of his secondary offerings. And that's when he all of a sudden became, he kind of had a resurgence, if you will. And I think Felix is certainly capable of doing that. I have him at 36 right now in my ranks. I think that I might move him up a couple ticks there just because I do believe he'll be solid for the majority of the year, and he's been fairly consistent in terms of the innings he gives you. So I'm pretty sold on your boy King Felix there, Tejole. But somebody that I know a lot of the staff at Friends with Fantasy Benefits is not sold on is Hisashi Iwakuma. I believe he's Japanese. Is he Japanese? I don't even know what he is technically, but Tejole, how do you like Hisashi Iwakuma, and are you in on him for this season once again?
In the vet, he's coming off the fairly disappointing year for me, but everybody kind of saw it coming. The Dodgers didn't want him because they didn't like what happened in his physical, so they signed a bunch of other old middle-aged bums. Some worked out, some did not, as usual. It's really interesting what's going on there in L.A. It's like something I've never seen before, nor do I agree with it. But like Iwakuma, to me, is kind of obviously on the downside of his career. I'll take anything under a 4 ERA. I'd like him to slide into the 3 or 4 slot. I'm hoping he's not open the season at number two. I'm just hoping eventually he's third or fourth, and I'd like to see Paxton really step up and take the two spot, and maybe even Smiley step up and take the three, and just Cindy would come out there, give you a decent chance to win, but I don't think he's dominating at all at this point in his career, and I will, as I said, take anything under four or around four.
Yeah, I mean, Paxton's legit. We'll get to him in a second. But, Evan, right now Iwakuma is going at about pick 272 in NFBC. That's the 72nd starting pitcher off the board, just behind Jarrell Cotton and Junior Guerra. Are you okay with that price tag?
I think somebody is going to take Iwakuma way before I'm even going to, you know, start sniffing around. I'm just out altogether. Maybe it was a good thing that he was giving up less grounders, even though that's not something you typically want to say about a starting pitcher. But he was giving up a .263 batting average against last year, which was 20 points worse than his previous career best. Even if it does come back down, he's still got contact issues. And I mean, I would just rather throw a dart at like a Chris Tillman or swallow all of the vomit and take like a Gio Gonzalez or a Jeremy Hellickson or Daniel Norris, or I mean, there's just a number of names that I am going to be taking in front of him, and he's, like I said, nowhere near any of my teams.
Yeah, I've always been kind of a Iwakuma apologist, if you will, and this year I'm just not. The strikeout numbers are going down. He's getting up there in age. The stuff doesn't play as well anymore. He's giving up more home runs, even though he's always been a, you know, kind of prone to the home to the long ball. He's, you know, just a lot of the things in his you know, underlying metrics are kind of trending downward. He's also missing less bats, also getting ahead in the count less. There's just a lot that I don't see going right. And he's an injury risk as well. I mean, he's had some significant injuries in his past, most recently in 2015. You know, there's just not really a lot of you know, positive to gain here from Iwakuma at all. But, you know, segue again. Another somebody that does have a lot of positive things going his way is James Paxton, and that's really – he's actually borderline the most interesting player on the Mariners as a whole this year, because, I mean, we know where a lot of the values lie here with this team, but Paxton is one of those guys that, you know, he started to break out last year, and I think a lot of people are interested in this. Tejo, you already kind of mentioned you like Paxton, and you're, you know, hoping he kind of takes a bigger step forward. Are you, you know, kind of going to believe that and take him in drafts this year?
I think so. I mean, this is kind of what I live and die by, is guys that are kind of like him, kind of in that level where it's still a bargain where you get him, but they have the hot, that big time upside. And so, like, I think he could really bring it. I mean, it's just the injuries for him is just always so frustrating. So that's kind of the main issue that I worry about with him. I mean, he throws 97, 98, 90. I mean, he throws gas. He's huge. Like, I mean, he's dominant. I mean, he was great for stretches last year, but it's just he said these injuries off and on. But if he can put together a full healthy season, I mean, he could be very, very good in real life, fantasy, everything. He could be the difference between the Mariners making the playoffs or not, in my opinion. I'm hoping for it, looking forward to it, praying for it. I think it's going to happen for sure. Most definitely it's happening.
Yeah, the one of the biggest things that was significant to me for Paxton was the fact that he jumped his fastball velocity up to 90, almost 97 miles an hour. That's absolutely sick. And he had a 4.9 strikeout to walk ratio last year, which was by far a career high for him, almost double what he did in 2015 in a you know, 67 inning sample size. I love him this year. I think that there's a ton of upside here, and I think that, you know, people are going to catch on to that. That's, you know, something that's known. Right now he's at pick 200, and I think that easily could go up as well. He's going right behind Sonny Gray, which I think is a mistake. You know, also behind guys like Jared Eichhoff, Jeff Samardzija, Carlos Rodon. I love Paxton this year. Evan, where are you in terms of Paxton, and are you going to be drafting him anywhere?
Yeah, you started throwing some of the names out there, Ike Goff, Matt Moore, Carlos Rodon. I was reading about some mechanical adjustments to his delivery, but I don't pretend to know a ton about that. I just know that it apparently had a lot to do with that gain in fastball velocity, What I want to discuss is this 66.3% left on base rate, which is an absolute enigma to me, because you look at the splits with men on base. Out of the windup last year, he was a 248, 279, 374 triple slash guy, which is not bad. You know, it's average. It's Felix Hernandez territory in the second half. With men on, he was a 313, 353, 450 against. And there was BABIP influence if you look at that, but there's something I'm missing in that equation, and he probably should have gotten dinged a lot more as far as the ERA is concerned, even if he was ironing out the walk rate as he went along last year. But he's a guy that's going to catch a ton of helium between now and when your actual draft starts, so just be careful there.
Yeah, you know what else is interesting, too, is he gave up a 360 BABIP last year as well. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, significantly. Usually pitchers regress back to about a 300 BABIP overall. For him to be up there is pretty crazy, especially since he, you know, ended up sitting at a 3.8 ERA. It could have been better if he had not. I mean, mind you, he did have a terrible strand rate as well, but I think that things can definitely move positively for him. I think it all comes down to injury and durability and whether he can sustain a, you know, decent amount of, you know, 150, 160 innings would be like the best case scenario for this year, you know, based on what he's done in the past. And if he does that, I think that he has the upside to have like a 3.2, 3.4 ERA and post significantly better strikeout numbers than your average, you know, pitcher. And be great. So I think that he's a borderline top 30 to top 25 starter. And right now he's going as starter 55. That presents a pretty high amount of upside if you wanted to go that route. And I think even if his price does go up, I still think you're getting quite a bargain based on the other guys that I see in front of him, you know, right now. Although I still would take Vincent Velasquez ahead of him. And you shut your
mouth. Of course you would. Of course you would.
Yovan Gallardo, I have nothing to say about him. I don't know if you guys want to include anything. If you want to actually include like a really nice, you know, some type of, I don't know, I guess some type of hate on him or some type of punchline, I would definitely be okay with that. But in fantasy terms, I'm out. So
you don't want to talk about Gallardo? I mean, I thought Gallardo was like, you know, you'd think the dude's like 45 years old. I mean, he's like 30, but he reminds me of like, I mean, feel like he's got nothing left. He's like Cologne, but still like just throwing. Cologne's been getting luck. I give it to him, and he's a little bit better. But Gallardo, like, I mean, I thought at one point this guy was like a star pitcher on the rise that I was really excited about, and that's been a long time ago. We knew what was going to happen to him in Baltimore. I'm sure that he'll be a little bit better in Seattle just because the park's not quite as hitter friendly, obviously. But you know, I'm hoping for the best, and you can have Seth Smith. I'm ready for him to be gone.
To put it in perspective,
Gallardo doesn't work out.
We ranked 100, and I ranked 130 starters, I believe, on my, you know, first initial ranks, and I didn't rank him. So that
he's 131.
He might be. He almost made the cut.
Yeah, so I mean. All right, so we'll just go to one of our young hogs. I mean, we're stacked, man. Check the farm system. Ask your prospect, dude. We got just crazy hogs on the staff on the come up. None that I can name, but I'm sure there's somebody down there.
Yeah, there is. Evan, do you have any awesome words for Yovani Gallardo?
I got awesome numbers, and that's his whip total over the last 5 years. 1.3, 1.36, 1.29, 1.42, and 1.58. He sucks at keeping guys off the base paths, and he's not striking guys out, which was the only thing that was really giving him value back around like 2010 with the Brewers. So hard pass.
Absolutely.
What was this? 5.42 ERA? Damn.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's nasty, dude. That's Khloe Kardashian underwear after two nights in Vegas. Nasty. That is disgusting, dude. That is disgusting.
Oh, boy. And that's what I was looking for when talking about Gallardo. So we can definitely move on now.
Oh,
I can't. Oh, man. All right. So the next starter is Drew Smiley. Obviously, somebody that came over from the Rays. I love Smiley. I always have. But I'm still worried about the shoulder, and I really will never be able to get past that. I have him ranked as my 61st starter right now, and he's going to trend down based on some of the things that are happening in this offseason and such. But I don't think the in terms of his overall value, I don't think it changes much by going to Seattle. It's still a pretty nice pitcher's park, and you know he's going at pick 231 in NFBC. That's right behind Taijuan Walker, right in front of Matt Shoemaker. I think that he's going to end up getting injured at some point this year. I think that that's fair to say, but you know, Evan, what do you think about Drew Smyly from a fantasy sense this year?
He crumbled with runners on base. He had his worst season batting average wise against lefties, home run issues, and he was pretty much just blah all the way across the board. And I would much rather talk about Khloe Kardashian with Tejal than I would talk about Drew Smyly. So.
Yeah, he's giving up more home runs and he's leaving the ball up, which is something I've also cited in earlier shows, is that his stuff just doesn't play as well anymore because he's not able to locate, and I think that's because of the shoulder injury. So until he gets that corrected, I don't think that we can even bank on him hitting 140 innings, let alone the career high 175 he hit last year. I just think that he is a fly ball pitcher, and that's fine for Seattle, but the whip numbers are still going to be bad, and the strikeout numbers are trending downward as well, even though he still is pretty good at missing bats. Tejal, is there any Khloe Kardashian-like similarities between Smyly and her?
Man, I was just looking for your insight. Her and Smyly, Khloe and him, no, not that I'm aware of, unless he only makes love to African-American athletes and entertainers, which I'm fine with. But I'm just, you know, I was looking for your input on him. Like, is he going to be, like, he has upside, right? Like, people loved this guy, like, last year, and he was coming off an injury, am I correct? Like, this is what we're talking about. Like, at one point, like, this guy's been dealing, like, this guy, there's upside here. Like,
there is upside, but
I mean, 60, you have him ranked at 60.
It's going to drop, like, though. Horrible. Like, when I do a new rankings list for my pitchers, he probably will be in the, like, 70 mark, 74, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Doesn't mean he doesn't have upside. Like, my main problem with him is that he had a shoulder problem that has never gotten corrected. And in the second half last year, it got worse. His numbers got worse. He only had a 6.5 strikeout per nine from July on. He ended up not having, he had a 56% first pitch strike rate, which means that he was only getting ahead of batters like 50+% of the time. Not very good. 9% swinging strike rate is worse than, 4% worse than what he did in the first half. I mean, in 2015, you know, before the shoulder injury, he had a 12% swing strike rate. So that kind of puts it in perspective. He also had a 10.5 strikeout per nine as well. I just feel like if he's not going to strike out batters at a, you know, 8+ clip, which I don't think he will, then he's really not serviceable for fantasy because he is going to still give up home runs and the whip numbers are never going to be that great. And mic drop? Is that what I hear? Mic drop?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the relievers here. Before we talk about Edwin Diaz, is there any people, you know, kind of under the radar here that we don't know about that could end up with some saves this year or could give us some really good ratios, Evan?
The dart throw that I like in this bullpen is Tony Zitch. He's got some issues going on with the arm, and he had issues with the walks when he was actually on the mound in a very small 13-inning sample, but he struck out 35% of batters, and if there's a name that's not Edwin Diaz, he's kind of the guy that I like.
Yeah, I like him too, and you know, I like Steve Cishek. I don't know if he's going to come back to the team or not, but I do like what he did last year for the most part, especially based on where you got him. So he's not bad. You know, there's a couple other guys in the pen. You know, Dan Altavilla is an interesting name, but I feel like, to me, Edwin Diaz is a strong contender to be a top five closer in fantasy this year. Tejal, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I'd be more on board with you there. I'm just like, I'm not as sold. I mean, a guy I trust again was telling me, you know, he was going to, you know, regress a little bit and he's pretty wild and blah, 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 stats, blah, 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 stats, numbers, yeah, and some other things that he was telling me about. And I was taking it all in and I was just I became a little concerned because this guy's, it's not like this guy is a genius or knows more about baseball than me because it's impossible. But it was just like he just sold me in this particular instance, but he did kind of regress a little bit and was a little wild and scared me. But you're right, with the K's that he's got and the dominant stuff he has, if he harnesses it even a little more or a lot more, he could be a true legend. But yeah, I lean more towards what you're saying. I agree with you.
Yeah, Evan, what do you feel about Edwin Diaz before I go on like a giant diatribe about him?
Before you just profess your love for him everywhere,
pretty much.
Yeah, if Drew Smiley is like the or even Iwakuma is the crusty Khloe Kardashian underwear, then like Edwin Diaz is that video of her in the pool making the waves with her ass. Taehol knows what I'm talking about. But I know people go gaga over the K's, but he was fantastic. Let's not gloss over it. The only relievers to have higher swinging strike rates than him last year were Luke Gregerson, Ken Giles, and some dude named Aroldis Chapman. But of relievers who threw 50 innings last year, Diaz was 60th in batting average, which you can kind of blame the 377 BABIP, 43rd in walk percentage, and you can just imagine what that does for his whip. So it's a good thing he thrived with men on base, increasing his K percentage and lowering the walk rate with ducks on the pond. But I'm not down with the top 100 draft price, and I'm not going to own him this year. So have fun. I'm out.
Wow. Just wow. Okay. Mm. Well,
bring it.
You cited the swinging strike rate, and he was actually top three in swinging strike rate with pitchers with 50 innings or more qualified. And, you know, while that's all, you know, fine and dandy, that's what I look for. I mean, he did have some luck in terms of strand rate or left on base rate. But I'm paying for the strikeouts. And I think Seattle's going to be somewhat good this year. I mean, I was looking through the AL the other day, and there's just not a lot of really good teams in the AL. I think Seattle can certainly make a case to be one of the top five teams and make it in as a wild card or even win the division if everything kind of broke right for them. And Edwin Diaz would be a big part of that. I think that he's, you know, not underrated because, I mean, obviously his draft cost is high, but I also am one of those guys that likes to either take one of the elite relievers or I wait a while. And Edwin Diaz is kind of the only exception in the middle there that I would take amongst relievers that I just believe will be able to exceed their draft costs. I am a little worried about a few things with him, especially the fact that he's so young and going to be, you know, pretty much in a full-time role for the first time ever in his career. And, you know, the fact that he might have gotten a little bit lucky last season, but as a whole, I really like what he's doing. And I love the premium velocity, 97, and the fact that he came up and didn't walk a ton of guys. You know, he had a pretty strong ground ball rate, and, you know, the expected ERA, a baseball HQ metric, was 2.22, and his actual ERA was 2.79. I really like that. That means that he was, you know, getting a little bit unlucky in some, you know, some respects. But I think that he's not going to strike out 15 per nine like he did last year, but I think, you know, 12 plus is definitely in the cards, and I think that he can definitely hit 40 saves, and that's what I love. So I love Diaz. Some people don't. That's fine.
And I love you.
Catch me outside. How about that?
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with some bet about Edwin Diaz and Vincent Velasquez. Just some type of, you know, friendly wager that, you know, maybe usually something that Justin and I will do is like change each other's like Twitter avatars. So I'm okay with something like that. Maybe throw in a Taehol avatar. What is your avatar, by the way, Taehol?
Like who pitches and who receives what?
What's your Twitter avatar right now? Like, and something weird. It's,
a portrait somebody famous did of me.
Wow.
With my chicken.
All right, on that note, I think we should wrap things up. I think we're good. So, Taehol, where can everybody reach you once again and check out your portrait of you and your chicken?
I just reactivated. Hopefully, I don't get in trouble. But it's at LordBedick1, the number. I don't know how you changed it or why that happened. I don't know what it used to be. Something happened. But that's where I'm at. And then on Snapchat, at Lord. Something, I think. I think just Taehol Bedick, you can type it in, you can find it. But it's been getting crazy on there. I've got guns. I've got, like, there's pigeons out here. I mean, I'm getting, like, it's getting real interesting on there. So I'd like for people to be involved.
I also liked your videos with Andy Singleton as well. I really enjoyed those. So I don't know if you guys
So I'll be coming back on there shortly. Yeah, I've been with the stuff I've been dealing with. I haven't had a spot really to good places to set up and do like on camera and do all that. And it's weird. The time it's been terrible, but I will be back on there shortly. Ralph's been on there. So us three are going to probably be doing it if I come back on there probably in the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, man, it'll be good stuff. Evan, where can people reach you and what are you up to nowadays?
At EasyEv3, but you should definitely follow either one of these guys because they're way more interesting than me. But let's talk baseball and not Khloe Kardashian, please and thank you.
I think that's all that should be talked about is Khloe Kardashian, but you can check me out on Twitter at MyCornerFWFB. Please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those podcast distributors. It really helps us out. You know, check out all the other team previews that are going on. Check out all of the prospect minutes with Matt Thompson. Check out all of the stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We're doing the whole MLB schedule this year. It's taking a lot of manpower to do that. So, you know, it has all of your needs on the site. So yeah, definitely check all of that out. I'll still be writing for Baseball HQ this year, and I'm going to be posting not only an update of my rankings on the site, but I'm also going to be doing the rankings for Fantasy Pros as well. So that's right, Tail. I got into Fantasy Pros as a
wait, 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 what?
Yes, I know.
Why wasn't this? Of course, you got in. I talked to the owner myself. That's why you're in. Don't let anybody else tell you differently. Of course, that's why you're in,
bro. It's all about who you know. It's not about what you know. It's who you know.
Yeah, don't. It doesn't. People, trust me. No matter how great you are, it doesn't matter. It's who you know.
All right. For Table, Evan, and myself, winter is coming.
People. Otherwise, we'd be famous right now. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
All right. Welcome in to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I can't do that. I need to restart.
Oh my God.
I had it in my head earlier today. I was like, I'm going to come in with an all right, and see if I can do it. I couldn't do it with a straight face.
Get it, Wooderson.